Hi, and welcome to the second part of my linguistics podcast. I'm Georg Hoon, a PhD student at the University of Cambridge, and I'm usually dealing with syntax or morphology, but in this podcast I'm interested in the public perception of linguistics and the general fascination of the subject. Last time I presented you with some thoughts on linguistics by a few non-linguist interview partners. I also took interviews with four of my colleagues about their interest in linguistics, the public perception of the subject, and the responsibilities of linguists. The people that I talked to were Teresa Bieberauer and Jannike van der Waal, both here at Cambridge, Sten Wickner from Aarhus University, who is currently a visiting scholar in Cambridge, and Volker Struckmeier from the University of Cologne. Incidentally, all of these people are syntacticians. I got an amazing amount of very interesting material, which, however, means that, in the interest of keeping this podcast to manageable size, I'll be able to present only a fraction of the answers I got. At the moment, I cannot tell if or when I'll find the time or opportunity to release some more of my material, but the excerpts that I'd like to present this time will be dealing mainly with the question of why linguistics is an exciting subject and how much or little of that fascination manages to reach outside the field. To start off with the first question, Jannike van der Waal explains what intrigues her in linguistics.
I think what really fascinated me in the beginning and still keeps fascinating me is all the puzzles. Language is puzzling. It's finding patterns and wanting to understand why people use exactly these patterns and why you can't say certain things in a different way. Any kind of puzzle still fascinates me, from the tone patterns in Makua to the use of specific prepositions in English.
Remember how one of my interview partners in the previous episode compared linguistics to archaeology because it allows us to discover more than meets the eye. It is this aspect of linguistics that Volker Struckmeier elaborates on when he mentions the observation that speakers have clear judgments for most linguistic structures as to whether or not they're acceptable, and then goes on to say, this seems to indicate, as also suggested by linguistic theorizing, that we carry with us a set of algorithms that are highly sensitive to linguistic contrasts. And if you get a chance to find out these algorithms and to investigate them simply by observing the reactions of speakers, then I think this is very interesting, because in doing so you can deduce information from something that seems so superficial and ordinary about something that is only ever accessible to indirect observation. In the previous episode, I heard Jannike mention the question that linguists are almost inadvertently faced with when they come out as linguists.
How many languages do we speak?
To put this question in perspective, it may be useful to consider the following two complementary aspects of linguistic research that Sten Wickner brings forth.
One of the things that I really like in linguistics is this combination between something theoretical and something practical. Because I always, as a Dane, not quite so true for Germans, but certainly true for Danes and other Scandinavians and for Dutch people, is that you're completely aware all the time that Danish is not the only language and that English is a language that counts and so on and so forth. Right? And so it's always a challenge to try and learn English and speak it as well as possible and go to Britain or and try and so that's the sort of practical thing, right? Speaking a foreign language and talking to people in their language, which is not your own, and showing yourself that you can, proving to yourself that you can get by in a foreign language and so on and so forth, that's the practical thing, and that's really a challenge, and that's great fun, not just in English but also in all sorts of other languages, right? So that's, and then there's this sort of scientific or academic or abstract or whatever you want to call it side of linguistics, which is where things, you know, show abstract patterns, whether it is, actually it's not, but whether it's the sort of morphological patterns in Latin, which are very difficult, or other things where you can see, well, this is a difference between German on one hand and Danish on the other hand, and, you know, how things can fall into place and make abstract, as I said, abstract patterns, and so the combination of those two, I think, is absolutely fascinating, right? If it was only the abstract pattern thing, then that's like doing, I don't know, what, logic or maths or something, right? But this is combined with something practical, something which is more of a skill or something. And that combination, I think, is absolutely cool.
This combination leads to an interesting position of linguistics as a discipline or a group of subdisciplines, as Jannike explains.
I should add something to that. Mm. I say we're in the humanities, but only really with one leg, because the other leg is really scientific. Language is a biological system, so the approach, especially for syntax here in Cambridge, is that it's a biological system. We should study it just as you would any other biological thing. Apply your scientific method, make your hypotheses about why grammars change, why a certain language has one construction and not the other. Then make your hypotheses, go out and test that, and test it on as many languages as you can find, not just on English. This is something that most people might not know about linguistics, but it's really the scientific approach to language.
Teresa Biberauer goes on to expand on that view as follows.
I think we have a particularly interesting situation because people appreciate that linguistics is a kind of bridge between the traditional arts and humanities and the sciences. So quite often in programs where people are sort of looking at intellectual content, which is where they're trying to span the two cultures, as it were, linguistics is a frequent port of call because people realize there is interest in both from both sides.
While this may be the case in academic circles, in Stan Vikner's experience, getting the appeal of linguistic questions across to the general public can sometimes be rather tricky.
No, I guess they don't. I guess the public, or not all of the public, should we say, sees this as a science in the same way that they see the other things as sciences, right? And that's because they don't really see the need for it, because these questions are obvious. You want to get people to speak better Danish, teach, give them more Danish classes, end of story, right? And so what's there to worry about, right? And to some extent, that's true for a lot of linguistics, right? The stuff that I'm interested in, that you're interested in, lots of other people are interested in, is variation between languages and sentence structure and in word order. And to a lot of people outside linguistics, if you sort of ask the question of why do you have the verb before the object in Danish rather than the other way around, to a lot of people the answer will be, well, because it sounds right. End of story, what's there to do research about? It's just clear, right?
In spite, or maybe even because of that, Teresa Biberauer argues that linguists have every reason to be confident about promoting their research.
I don't think linguistics is a hidden discipline, or it certainly doesn't need to be a hidden discipline, because there's a great diversity of very innovative research being done in the UK and also by UK-based linguists in collaboration with linguists in the rest of the world, and that's exactly what you want for a healthy field. So I think that there needs to be serious engagement, obviously, but I definitely don't see... It's not the sort of field where you think, oh dear, we have to hide our head in shame because we have nothing to offer, or we can't possibly see why, how we could ever get anybody to engage with what we do. I think there we're quite lucky, precisely because people do actually care about language. And I think we have an advantage in the sense that everybody sort of thinks they know about language, and then they're easily surprised and then obviously drawn in if you start pointing out aspects of language that they probably haven't thought of before.
The fact that everybody has access to language in some way or other can, however, sometimes make it harder for linguists to be heard. The question of whether or in how far people are willing to have certain truisms about language challenged may have very real repercussions. There are certain policy issues in which linguistics can and probably should play a role, and this is where the issue of how linguistic research is perceived publicly may have a significant impact on whether its results are taken seriously. Stan Vikner reports about one such case related to ongoing discussions about migration and immigrant communities.
The big difference between linguistics and the other empirical sciences is that the positive way to put it is that everybody has access to the data in a way that you only do to a limited extent if we're talking molecular physics. And the slightly less positive way of putting it is that everybody thinks he or she is an expert because everybody speaks a language, and that makes everybody, quote unquote, an expert in linguistics, right? On one hand, that's quite an interesting fact because it means that it's more or less easy to talk to people and explain to them what you're doing and give them examples of the questions, at least if you can relate it to something in their own language, because they all have some sort of feeling for that or think it's sort of interesting, right? On the other hand, it's sort of difficult sometimes to try and argue with people because there is a sort of common sense approach to this, right? We've all learned a language, etc., etc., and so even though you might have good scientific reasons and there's been research done into a particular problem and you actually know something about a particular problem from a linguistic point of view, I think that it can be very difficult to convince people if it goes against what they believe from a sort of common sense point of view, right? Where I imagine that if you're a chemist or a physicist or an astronomer, that's more easily done because people are more, I don't know what, people are more ready to believe or accept that this is how it is, right? I have some examples in mind here. So for instance, I haven't done research into this myself, but it would seem from linguistic research that we know quite a lot about language acquisition and what it takes for immigrants into a country, and especially second-generation immigrants, to learn the language of that country, what is good for them and what is not good for them. This happened to be a rather large topic of a debate in Denmark. You know, how do you get especially kids of immigrants to read and speak Danish as well as possible, right? And there's a common sense answer to this, which is give them more Danish classes, right? But actually, it's not backed up by research. Of course, they should have Danish classes. We're not saying they shouldn't. But the point is that if you come from, say, a Turkish-speaking home, it doesn't have to be Turkish, but it happens to be one of the major immigrant languages in Denmark. If you come from a Turkish-speaking home and you grow up to be six before you've heard your first Danish, then it actually makes more sense, gives better result, we know this from research and from experiment, etc., if those people get some chance to also have classes in Turkish and also learn how to write Turkish as well as learn how to write Danish. And so they sort of learn those two, have those two languages, both have classes in both Turkish and in Danish in their primary school years, and possibly even longer than that, but at least the first 5 years or something, right? That we know that. That is counterintuitive, right? Because if people come to school and they don't speak Danish, of course they should just have a billion hours of Danish classes and they should stop speaking Turkish, right? Of course they earn the rights to speak Turkish to mum and dad at home, but the Danish school system shouldn't waste any money or time on teaching them Turkish, right? But their Danish will actually be better if they do this. Turkish, if they get Turkish classes as well as Danish classes, and if they learn how to write Turkish as well as learn how to write Danish. We know this, experiments show this, and so on and so forth. That will obviously improve their Turkish a lot, but it will also improve their Danish. And that feels counterintuitive, and so everybody, because everybody has learned a language, and I know how I learned my Danish, etc., etc., people not prepared to accept this, right? That can be infuriating, right? Because if you had research that showed that certain chemicals interact in a particular way and you put that out, people would just believe you. At least I believe that's how it is to be a chemist, but I don't know, right? But as a linguist to say, well, this is what research shows and this is what our experience shows and so on and so forth, if it feels counterintuitive, right, then people just won't accept you. And it's possible, what's it called? We have a class in Aarhus called Theory of Science or something like that. And I have a quote there from a mayor of a town in Denmark who says, well, this is just one of those cases where you should listen to your own common sense and don't believe these academics because what do they know kind of thing, right? As an argument for how you should only spend money on Danish classes and nothing else. So this is just an example of on one hand, it's very interesting to do linguistics and to talk to non-linguists about linguistics because they all have insights about it and opinions about it and there's something to talk about. But on the other hand, it can also be infuriating because if it's counterintuitive, then it can be difficult.
The issue of how to get people to pay attention to linguistics as a science might, at least to some part, be due to the role and application of the results of linguistic research in education, or rather to the fact that all too often insights from modern linguistics hardly play any role there. They don't convey the idea that you can investigate language in a rational manner, just like you can investigate other complex natural phenomena. Instead, you get the impression that linguistics is some esoteric, secret field of studies that is only based on dubious intuition and premonitions. And that's just not the case, of course. In spite of these problems, Theresa is quite positive about the general increase in public awareness with regard to linguistic research.
I mean, I think we're very lucky these days because there are actually a very large number of very accessible popular science books and also some rather good videos on YouTube and similar places that have exposed people to aspects of linguistics that I certainly wasn't aware of when I got into linguistics. So people do know that we are interested in linguistics savants, for example, and they're also sometimes familiar with the fact that interesting things happen if you have particular impairments that affect language but don't affect the rest of your intelligence, or affect the rest of your intelligence but don't affect language. More generally, I think there's also some awareness, although not nearly as much as there should be, of the fact that linguists are interested in endangered languages and minority languages. I think that's certainly a question. I mean, I was quite impressed when South Africa finally became democratic. One of the first considerations was thinking about the language situation, and everybody knew you needed to get linguists to discuss this topic. So that was quite encouraging. So I think sometimes we think no one has any idea what linguistics is about, and that's true, because most students who start studying linguistics don't have any appreciation for what a diverse research area it is. But I do think people actually have more of an idea about certain corners, and obviously that's quite directly connected to what's available in the news media and in print, and we're not in the worst position.
On that optimistic note, I will finish. I would be happy if this program convinced linguists of the need for, and ultimately also the satisfaction of, engaging in outreach work. And on the other hand, if it were to inspire people outside linguistics to get curious about language research. If you've got any questions, get in touch with your resident linguist, or the traveling ones for that matter. Yours truly also appreciates any kind of feedback via email. gfkh3@cam.ac.uk. My website can be found online if you search for GFKH3. Thank you very much for listening, and many thanks also to all the people who were willing to sacrifice their time in order to get interviewed. Have a nice day.